Well, as promised, Paul O'Sullivan is with us on the line now. Paul, I've just had a really good chat with the editor of the Financial Mail, Rob Rose, who's done a lot of work on crooks, and most, as we well know, well, so have you, but Stein Heist, I don't know if you got to read that book, but it really unpacked the Juster story incredibly well. And in the latest edition, he exposes a guy called Martin Levick, who took people in Johannesburg, including Anthony Ball, who's a founder of Brait, the investment bank, private equity company, for 700 million rand. I mean, those, you know, that's really big numbers. And yet, as Rob says, he's walking around telling people his own version of the truth, as is your story. How come these guys can do this? How come they don't get put behind bars?
Well, what you have to remember, Alec, first of all, the criminal justice system has been captured since at least 10 years ago. So you have criminals running the criminal justice system. Now, in the last year or so, that grip on the criminal justice system has started to be lifted. But it's not going to be fixed in 5 minutes. In fact, I think I did the exercise a couple of weeks ago that if you had a professional team of prosecutors, and I'm talking about 10 teams, so 10 teams of prosecutors, and the teams would be a senior counsel and a junior counsel, and if you had these 10 teams together and you prosecuted everybody that was involved in state capture, that 10 teams is going to be busy for the next 30 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's now, a bit sobering.
Well, the scale of the problem really is that everywhere you look, I mean, this morning I was reading something on Business Insider about, you know, the validity of my lifetime platinum status at Voyager. Mm. And it dawned on me that it was 6 years ago that I wrote to Duda Myeni and told her that as a lifetime platinum member, I wasn't really keen on the way she was running the airline into the ground. 6 years later, she still hasn't been criminally charged. And I want to remind that in 2015, in March 2015, I opened a criminal docket against her. 5 years later, nothing has happened. So you have this enormous, shall I say, mountain to climb. And we don't really have enough mountaineers and ropes and tackle and so off to get on with the job.
So Levick and Juster would be sitting back thinking, well, come and fetch me, because the chances are the criminal justice system, from the way you've explained it, is broken. I can get away with it.
I think that's the case with a lot of these issues. I mean, we opened a case against Lucky Montana 5 years ago. Nothing. We opened cases against people like Jiba, Mwebi, Munu, and other people in the police and the criminal justice system, which we were believed were involved in serious criminal activity. Nothing has happened to any of them. And then when I look at some of the cases that have come forward for prosecution, they're coming forward 3 or 4 years after the event. Now, as an example, Trindade was arrested in December. His next appearance in court is May this year. So what happens in 6 months? Nothing. You know, the wheel grinds to a halt. I mean, to be frank with you, the justice system is loaded in favor of those that commit massive crime, white-collar crime. Now, if I tell you the scale of white-collar crime in this country exceeds all of the other crimes by, in other words, the white-collar crime represents 90% of all the crime that's taking place in South Africa in rand value, and yet the resources being applied to deal with that 90% of the crime that's taking place is less than 10% of the resources that are available in the police service. So you've got this complete upset in terms of the real figures.
What do other countries do, Paul? Because clearly this must be a situation everywhere.
What the other countries do is, you know, they deal effectively with white-collar crime before it gets out of hand. Now, it's got out of hand in South Africa. And to give you a classic example, a poor person, and I'm talking about somebody living in poverty, can go into Checkers or Pick and Pay and steal a loaf of bread and get caught, be arrested immediately, being caught the next day, have the matter postponed for a month, and a month later have a trial and be found guilty and sentenced. And that all happens within a matter of weeks. Mm. Now, so if you can steal a loaf of bread and get instant justice, how is it that you can steal 100 million and not get any justice? And that is the challenge we face in South Africa. And the problem is, until it's dealt with, I'm afraid the economy of this country is going in one direction. I mean, if you list all the companies that are now suffering and teetering on the brink of bankruptcy, state-owned companies, Nokal, then you really are looking at the scale of the problem. SAA, Eskom, the arms company, what do they call it, Danel? You know, every single Transnet, Praza, every single state-owned company is now running at a loss.
But just to go back to your bread loaf stealing example, why is that person having to sit in jail for a month, and the white-collar criminals, who it's been very well exposed already in the media and everywhere else, and take Steinhoff as an example, are still living in the lap of luxury wherever they might be. Well, surely the question is the legal resources.
Yeah, part of the problem also is that you get bail in South Africa. You get bail even if you've murdered somebody. And there's very few countries in the world where you can be accused of murder and there'd be a fairly strong case against you, and you can apply for, and in most cases, get bail immediately. Now, the reason for that, and when we come to the big fraud cases, you have this situation. A lot of the frauds I investigate, the people that I'm onto, they know that I'm onto them. And what do? They put up red herrings. They put up defenses. And some of their defensive strategies include hiring lawyers, expensive lawyers at that, to bring fake claims against me that I'm harassing them. Trindade is a classic example. It was a year ago that I told him to pay back the money. And within 3 or 4 months, when he ignored me and I ramped up the, to use his words, harassment, he then runs off to court and launches an anti-harassment order application against me. And he hires top lawyers at 50,000 plus a day. And I have to deal with that. I have to fight back. So I end up spending my own money dealing with these criminals. Of course, it didn't help him. He's been arrested and he's been charged. But the acid test will be when he gets sent to prison. Now, when you've got lawyers who are happy to live off the proceeds of crime, and there's no shortage of those in South Africa, when you've got lawyers that do that, they are being pitched up against not necessarily the best paid lawyers working for the state. Mm. And then you've got to remember that on average, a state advocate who's prosecuting in white collar crime, those advocates, not only are they not the best paid advocates in town, but they also have a massive workload, and they don't get to cherry pick the cases that they're going to work on. These cases are thrown at them and they're overwhelmed. It's impossible. So what they do is they pick the cases where they think they can make a difference. And then if you've got a case where a person's stolen a couple of hundred million and he muddies the waters so much that the state prosecutor is running around in circles, that state prosecutor in many cases would say, oh, this is too much trouble. I'll rather focus on the ones where the accused are not putting up such a fight.
Paul, I understand. That's what happens. I understand that. But surely in South Africa, there are many people who are socially minded, and there've got to be some pretty good lawyers who are in that group as well. Isn't there a case to be made for maybe bringing some of them in for national service, even if it is in a short period, to help out? We've gone through a terrible 10 wasted years. to help out in putting these people behind bars? Is there any political will to do that?
Then you're left wondering, you know, the criminal underworld out there is like a big network. So they all know each other. All these criminals in the white-collar crime world, they all know each other. They're all using the same pool of attorneys and advocates. So now what you are now suggesting, is that we get these hounds to run with the foxes and hunt with the hounds.
Got it, yeah.
Now, conflict of interest. And you see the conflict immediately when you see some of these criminal lawyers being appointed acting judges. And I'm left wondering, who in their right mind would appoint a criminal lawyer an acting judge where there's a great possibility that he's going to see his client sitting in front of him, if not his client, he's going to see lawyers that have instructed him in the past standing there in front of him.
So what's the solution?
I think the solution is to go for the low-hanging fruit. Now, in my opinion, and I take, we'll use the Eskom/Trindade case as an example. We can show beyond doubt that 60 million plus minus was paid to Eskom employees. Now, some of that payments were made through a process of money laundering. That's a very serious criminal offense. Corruption is a very serious criminal offense. Instead of charging him with every single payment that he made and every single money laundering act that he committed, just select one or two simple, squeaky clean charges that he can't wriggle out of. The trial will last 6 or 10 hours in court, and he can get sentenced. He might not get life in jail, but he might get 10 or 15 or 20 years in jail. And justice has been served because he's out of the system. And if they do that, instead of having trials that drag on for years, I look at Jackie Celebi. That trial lasted 2.5 years. I had a case in 1994 when I was a police officer working in the fraud department at the then Johannesburg Central, John Forster Square. I arrested a guy called Andre Boer. It took me 3 months to write the charge sheet. His trial lasted 3 years. And after he was convicted and sent to prison, myself and the prosecutor were having lunch together with the regional court magistrate that sent him down. And the magistrate, as I was having my pudding, and I nearly choked on it, said, of course, if you'd have charged him with 10 charges, he would have still got 15 years. And I charged that guy with 1,800 charges. I learned from that.
Yeah.
And now when I open criminal dockets, I don't throw the book at them. I select clean charges and say, charge them with that. Now, the state have got to start doing the same. They've got to go for the jugular.
Good practical advice from Paul O'Sullivan. We're going to be talking with Kevin Shames in just a moment. Thanks to Paul, as always, for giving us the insights into some of these dilemmas that, well, if you're outside of the loop, are very hard to understand.